Well, brethren, would you consider yourself to be independent? If you thought about your status in life, would you consider yourself independent, or would you consider yourself dependent on others, or maybe even codependent? In terms of your freedom, what would you say you're an independent person? Now, for most of us, the answer is yes. We want to be independent. We don't want to be dependent on others. We want to have our freedom. We're drawn to this idea of self-reliance. That's a big thing now, self-reliance, or being able to take care of ourselves. And that's a good thing. Sometimes we might even go, though, so far as to feel like we don't need anyone else. We don't need anyone's help. We can take care of it all on our own. But is dependence on others such a bad thing? Well, in my sermon time today, I would like to explore this concept of independence and freedom and dependence. It's actually an interesting dichotomy, especially with our spiritual life. Now, of course, our nation was founded on principles of independence and freedom. The earliest settlers, the idea of independence was important. It was a driving force. It's what brought a lot of the people over to the colonies. Earliest colonists came to this country because they wanted freedom of religion, freedom to practice their religion. They were persecuted in Europe, in England, and over there, and they came to the New World to be free to practice the religion that they wanted. But they remained subjects to the crown. Of course, this spirit of independence eventually culminated in the American Revolution, the War for American Independence. And, of course, the Declaration of Independence, the document that some would say is the ultimate document when it comes to the subject of independence. And over the past 200-plus years, we, as a nation, have tried to spread our form of independence, our brand of democracy and independence, throughout the world, sometimes with success and sometimes not. But really, independence and freedom for nations is not a new principle. It's not something that was new when the American Revolution happened. It's been around for as long as there have been nations or kingdoms. Because for as long as there have been nations or kingdoms, there's been oppression. And as long as there's been oppression, there's been a desire of people and nations to be independent, to be out from under that oppression. Throughout recorded history, there have been kingdoms or nations which have conquered other kingdoms and nations. And in some instances, the individuals in the conquered nation became part of that nation, and they were allowed to remain free. And in others, they were either slaughtered or they were slaves to the conquering forces. And just again, as history is full of instances of kingdom conquering kingdom, it's also full of instances of kingdoms or conquered peoples rebelling against those who have conquered them. You can read about the ancient Greeks and Persians, the Roman Empire, the British Empire, on, and history is just full of these things. And the Bible also records these situations as early as Genesis. You don't have to turn, but Genesis 14, early on here, 14 verses 1 through 4, records a rebellion, and it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer. I tried to look that up, how to say that, and I still said it wrong. The king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma, Shember, king of Zebium, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. All these joined together in the valley of Siddim, that is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served him, and in the 13th year they rebelled. So we have again, as I said, a nation being conquered, and then those nations rebelling. We also see it in the history of Israel and Judah themselves. The very fact that the ancient people of Israel became two kingdoms is rooted in rebellion against a repressive king. 2 Chronicles records that. 2 Chronicles chapter 10, verses 16 through 19. 2 Chronicles 10, 16. Now when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, this is the son of of Solomon. When all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, "What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to your tents, O Israel, to now see to your own house, O David." So all Israel departed to their tents, but Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah. Verse 18, then King Rehoboam sent Hadoram, who was in charge of revenue, but the children of Israel stoned him with stones and he died. Therefore, King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. Because of the king's decision to impose a heavier burden on the people, the other tribes of the nation, they say, what part do we have with the house of David? What share do we have there? And so they rebelled against the house of David. And that scripture here says that that rebellion is still in place today, and it is. The modern nations that from which the tribes of Israel, or that are the tribes of Israel, they don't always side with the modern nation of Israel or the tribe of Judah. And ultimately, rebellion was the reason that Israel and Judah were removed from the land given to them by God. 2 Kings, back to 2 Kings chapter 24. 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. And the Lord sent against him raiding bands of Chaldeans, bands of Syrians, bands of Moabites, and bands of the people of Ammon. And then in verse 20, you drop down to verse 20. It says, "For because of the anger of the Lord, this happened in Jerusalem and Judah, that he finally cast them out of his presence. Then Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon." And chapter 25 goes on to talk about the fall of Jerusalem and the captivity of Judah by Babylon. The northern kingdom had actually been taken into captivity many years before, obviously. And again, it was due to rebellion. Now, the rebellions mentioned here, and many of those throughout history, again, they were brought about by this desire to be independent, to have freedom, and have freedom within the nations involved. They wanted to be free of the oppression of the rulers that were ruling over them, the nations that were ruling over them. The 10 tribes of Israel wanted to be free of the repressive ways of King Rehoboam, and thus we had the split in the family of Israel. Later, both Israel and Judah wanted to be free from the nations that had subjugated them, and ultimately they ceased to be nations for a while, for centuries. Now, as far as the United States, obviously the fight for independence and freedom, it was pretty successful, I guess. We as a nation have enjoyed many freedoms that many in the world haven't had throughout, that many in the world only dream about, actually. But within about 100 years after our nation was established, a nation, again, based on independence and freedom, we had a civil war that was fought about freedom. Started out, it was the freedom of the states to make their own decisions. But it became about a bigger type of freedom, became about the freedom of a group of human beings from slavery. Again, a definite lack of independence there on the individual level. Now, of course, again, slavery wasn't a new thing when it came to the American colonies. It's been around since the ancient times. If you look up origins of slavery, you find a lot of sources say it predates recorded history, that it started when we went from hunter-gatherer societies to a more agricultural society, as we began to form towns and communities. And I guess that would make sense if you've got all these fields you need to work, you conquer somebody, whoever survives, you make them work your field. So that's the theory or the historical thinking on that. But regardless, we know that slavery, it's part of the record of the Bible. It was the condition of the tribes of Israel before they left Egypt. Exodus 2, 23 and 25. Gives that. Exodus 2 and 23. "Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Then the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out. And their cry came out to God, up to God, because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and he acknowledged them." So we know that story. We know that they were slaves. They were in bondage there in Egypt. And then Moses came and led them out through the hand of God. They were set free from their bondage. And even the nation of Israel had slaves or bondservants. The Torah has Leviticus 25, 39 through 55 provides specifics about how they were to treat slaves or bondservants. Leviticus 25, 39 through 43, it tells how they were to treat brethren who sold themselves into slavery or into service. They were treated as hired servants and then were released in the year of Jubilee. And then Leviticus 25, 44, you can just jot those down, explained who could be a slave or a bondservant. So there was slavery in the Old Testament. The New Testament book of Philemon, it was used by those who were pro-slavery and those who were anti-slavery to show that to support their cause. Each side saw Paul's entreaty to Philemon to treat his runaway slave well as a brother. They saw it as justifying their position that slavery could be okay or that slavery was not okay. And again, of course, the Bible, there's many biblical references that have been used throughout history to justify or condemn slavery in all its forms. Now, slavery is not as prevalent, maybe, as it once was, or maybe it's just as prevalent, but it's just hidden. It does still happen. In our modern days, human trafficking is a big problem. We knew a family who had a young daughter, and she was lured away to go meet a guy she had met on the internet. And they found her before she got to Cleveland, which, according to the authorities, was where she would be human. She would be trafficked. Cleveland is actually one of the third largest city for human trafficking in the nation. So, if she had made it to Cleveland, she would have been gone. But it does. So slavery does still exist. One source I looked at is Business Insider. It estimates there's an estimated 35.8 million slaves, people who are enslaved, in the world today. And India actually has the highest percentage of people in slavery. So it does still happen. Now, we also can be slaves, and we have been slaves. Hopefully not in that physical sense of slavery, but Paul tells us in Romans, and if you'll turn there, Romans 6. Romans 6, we'll read 15 and 16. Paul writes here, "What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether to sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness?" He states very plainly here that we can be slaves to sin. Or we can choose the other side, other way, and be slaves to righteousness. It's one or the other. But we are slaves to whom we obey. The Messiah spoke of this bondage as well. If you go back to the book of John, John chapter 8. John 8 and verse 34. It says, "Jesus answered them, 'Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin.'" So even plainer there, it's even plainer than what Paul made it. Whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. We've all sinned, we've all fallen short, so we've all at one time or other been slaves to sin. We've all fallen short. Now, to be called a slave or even to be called a servant might rile us up a bit. We might not like that terminology. As individuals, again, we want our independence. We want to be free. We don't want to be considered a slave. Groups of people who are enslaved or held in bondage, they want their independence or their freedom. And we see this, it goes down to that individual level. It's in us as well. We want to be free. We're born with that desire to be free. Happened as we grew up from infant to toddler, from toddler to child, child to adult. We wanted more and more freedom. I know I did. I couldn't wait till I got my car so I could be free of I'd be able to drive wherever I wanted to go. Then I needed gas money and I got a job, and then I wasn't free anymore, really, as much. I didn't have as much freedom as I thought. But we like that freedom. We want to be free. So to be called a servant or to be called a slave of someone else, that might rile us up a bit. I work in the public sector, and I tell all my employees and myself that we're public servants. And I always tell them, if you don't like the word servant, then you're in the wrong job, because that's what we're supposed to do. And there's quite a few that don't like that word, but they're still there. But now back to John here. He does say that if we commit sin, we're slaves to sin. But he also tells us that we can be free. So John 8 still, go back up to 31. We'll read 31 through 36 this time. It says, then Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free? See, they got a little riled up because he said, you know, I'll make you free. So you've been slaves or servants. They were a little riled up about it. Verse 34 again, it says, Jesus answered them, most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. We aren't slaves. We've been slaves to sin, but Christ has made us free. He's made us free from the penalty of sin. We still sin, we still fall short, but if we abide in his word, we know the truth, we shall know the truth, and we will be made free. Second Corinthians 3:17, Paul talks more about this freedom. Second Corinthians 3, verse 17. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Again, that comes from the Messiah. It comes from Christ. He does abide with us. We have liberty. We are at liberty. We've been made free. And Romans 8:18 through 21 tells us that the creation itself will be delivered into this glorious liberty. It's yearning for that. It's groaning for that liberty, the liberty that will come. The liberty of the children of God. But that's where a lot of people stop. I'm free. Christ has made me free. And therefore, he said, if the Son makes you free, you're free indeed. And they take that freedom and they use it incorrectly. 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter 2, verses 15 and 16. Peter warns about this. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. Peter warns here that we have to use that freedom correctly. We have to use it as bondservants of God, not as a reason to sin, not as a reason to do wickedness. Galatians 5 says, sort of the same thing, Galatians 5 and verse 13. Paul says, for you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. So again, we have this freedom, but it's a freedom to serve others, to use it to serve others. Not as an opportunity for the flesh. We can easily do this. It's easy to take that liberty and just to the once saved, always saved mentality. We've been set free. I can do what I want. We can become selfish. We can become so selfish that we don't want to serve others. And that's why he says, with love, but through love, serve one another. In verse 14, he says, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So he repeats that, again, how we are to use that liberty. Now, it goes back to our individual desire to be free, to be independent. If we take that desire to be free, to be independent, and we let it play out in our heads, eventually we don't want to be termed, again, we don't want to be termed slaves, we don't want to be termed servants. We don't want to serve anyone. We're free, after all. And of course, in our nation, liberty, freedom, it's a God-given right. It's in the Declaration of Independence. We all men have the right to liberty. And it's celebrated here. And we've romanticized it here as well. The early explorers of the interior of our nation, the pioneers, they set out to carve out a life in the wilderness. And it was that they had to be independent to do that. They had to go to dangerous lands with hostile individuals or just hostile conditions. The cowboys of the Old West, they could do it all by themselves. We have stories, we have myths about this that just talk to that romantic notion of freedom that we have. When I was younger, I loved reading Western novels. I probably have read just about every Louis L'Amour book that he ever wrote, and they're great books. Kind of the same thing all the time, but they're just great books. The hero was all, these cowboy stories. They were rugged individuals. They could do anything. They would ride into town or they'd ride into a situation and they'd take care of it. And again, it was sort of the epitome of independence to me. It was this rugged individual by himself. He took care of everything. Didn't need anyone. Again, like I said, the main character would step in. They'd save everyone, and then he would ride off. And again, he'd be by himself. He had the independence to do all that. And this idea of personal independence, well, it still affects me. It affects individuals today. It affects many in the world. People want to be more self-sufficient. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not telling that we shouldn't be more self-sufficient. There's a real movement towards that in the world today. There's a lot of information about it on the web. You can look up self-sufficiency, and there's a lot of things about that. Out there, there's a growing number of folks who are interested in homesteading and things of that nature, and that's wanting to be self-sufficient, wanting to become more independent, living off the grid, so to speak. But in our modern times, again, going back to the idea of personal freedom, it's kind of run amok. Many believe that, again, that individual liberty that we have, we can just use it for whatever we want. As long as we don't hurt anybody too badly, we can use our individual liberty to do whatever we want. And again, we have that thinking that if I have a problem, I'm going to fix it myself. I'm going to be an individual. I'm going to be an independent individual. I'm going to take care of it myself. I don't need any help from anyone. This idea of self-reliance, again, we just go through it, through life, and we want to take care of everything ourselves. But it brings us to an interesting dichotomy or a paradox here. Because we have this individual freedom, we want to take care of everything ourselves, but really we're never truly free. We do have to rely on others. We can never really be going it alone and make it very far in life. At least not maybe the way we've romanticized it to be. We can't necessarily be that rugged lone individual who can do it all by themselves. On the physical plane, we have to rely on others. I read a lot of homesteading and organic gardening type blogs. I'm one of those people who want to be more self-sufficient and do the homestead thing. But you realize that these people, they rely on a lot of other individuals for information. And just the fact that I'm going to read them is means I'm relying on them. I started to realize this. I was listening to an organic gardening podcast, and this individual that did the podcast, she's famous. She's a great horticulturalist. She knows all this stuff, and that's how you read her bio. That's what she is. But every week she have a guest on, and she goes, I couldn't wait to get you on the show. I've been wanting to talk to you since I wrote you that letter about what did I need to do about my tomatoes. And I'm thinking, for an expert, she sure needs a lot of help. I mean, why am I even listening to her? She sure needs a lot of help. But the more I thought about it, I realized we all need that help. We can't be, again, the rugged individual or that romanticized view of an independent individual that we want. We have this born desire to be independent, but we can't do it all by ourselves. We need help, at least from time to time. If I have a problem with my car and I try to go it alone, I'm going to have a car that does not run any longer because I don't know what I'm doing. I would need to seek advice from someone who knows what the problem could be. And again, it's hard for us at times to do this. It's hard for me. I come from a long line of individuals grandparents that I don't know how many times you would say, "Well, why did you all do this? We were going to come help you." "I just didn't want to bother anybody." You know, something that they could have hurt themselves doing. "But I just didn't want to bother anybody. We just didn't want to do that. We just do it ourselves. So, if you have that same kind of family, then you know you have that mentality. You want to do it yourself. And again, the same can be true on the spiritual plane. We can apply the spirit of independence to our spiritual life as well. We can try to be a spiritual cowboy if you want. "Got a spiritual problem? I'll just fix it myself. Don't have to go to anybody. Got something I need to overcome? I can do it. I don't need anybody praying for me. I don't need to ask anything. I don't need to go anywhere. I'm not going to bother God about it because he's got other things to fix. I'm going to fix this on my own. I'm an individual. I'm independent. I can do it." But that doesn't work. Again, if you try to go it on your own, if you go it alone, then again, you're not going to get very far. You're not going to get very far in overcoming. You're not going to get very far in getting rid of that sin. We remain slaves to sin. Now, David realized this. He realized this paradox. He realized this. Psalm 18. Psalm 18, verse 1. We'll read verses 1 and 3. And this is a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spoke to the Lord these words of this song on the day that the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. That's the lead-in in my Bible. And it says, "I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies." David had a big army. He had an army. He had people following him. But he knew that God was his refuge, his strength. Psalm 61. Same thing. 61 verses 3 and 4. "For you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wings." Selah. Now, David's speaking more to the physical world here, but the principle applies to our whole lives, again, the spiritual and the physical. We cannot have an attitude of independence that completely excludes our dependence on God. As Paul mentioned in Galatians, we can't use the freedom given to us as an opportunity for the flesh. We have to remember that our independence is from the penalty of sin, freedom from death, not freedom to do what we please or whatever we want to do. So what is our dependence on God supposed to look like? If we can't have this go it alone attitude, what is this dependence on God? What should it look like? Well, 1 Peter 1 tells us. 1 Peter 1, verse 17 through 19. Sure, I got the right page here. "And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourself through the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot." We're redeemed. You could say we're bought with and by the blood of Christ. Again, that sounds like slavery, though, doesn't it? How can we be set free by Christ but then bought or redeemed? Romans 6, 17, verses 17 through 23. Again, we read this. "But God be thanked," again, we'll go back to 15. "What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. We're to be slaves of righteousness. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of unlawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as a slave of righteousness for holiness. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have then in the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. But now, having been set free from sin and having become slaves of God, you have your fruit to holiness and the end, everlasting life. Verse 23, for the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. So we are to be slaves to God, slaves to righteousness, slaves to our Almighty Father in heaven. Our dependence on God has to look like that. It has to look like, for our human minds to comprehend it, it has to look like we are slaves. We are a form of slavery. Now, in the practice of slavery, the one enslaved, of course, became the property and was owned completely by the master. The slave had to rely on the master for everything. In its human form, of course, the practice was often cruel. It's why it's an awful thing. But slavery to God is even forced. We're not even forced to be slaves to God. We have a choice. We can choose, again, we can choose to be slaves to sin, or we can choose to be slaves to righteousness. But we have to remember, we're all slaves to something. Despite our independent nature, our independence, our desire for independence, we're all slaves to something. Paul tells us in that passage there that we are. We're either slaves to sin or we're slaves to righteousness. So our slavery is really about obedience. Who or what are we going to obey? Are we going to obey our flesh, follow our own way, do what we want, use that independence again to just to whatever we want to do? Depend on only ourselves, only to find out later that, of course, we're slaves to the flesh. We've been slaves to sin all this time. Or will we obey and follow and depend on God, becoming slaves to our righteous Creator? Again, we don't really like that term slave, though. That might rile us up a bit. It's a harsh term. But we have to follow the commandments. We are, as Paul says here, but let's go back to Christ's teachings here. John 8. Let's see how he viewed it. John 8. Finish up here. John 8, 31 through 36 here. I'll tell you what, actually, let's go to John 15. I'm running a little long. John 15, we'll read verses 1 and 10, 1 through 10. Remember that in John 8, we were told we have to abide in his word. John 15, 1 through 10, what we read at Passover. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered. And they gather them and throw them into the fire and they are burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire, and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. We cannot go it alone and be independent. We have to have complete and total reliance on the master. We have to be attached to the vine, and we have to be in complete reliance on the vine dresser. Independence and dependence, slavery and freedom. When it comes to our calling, it may seem like a huge contradiction. Our freedom requires us to become slaves. Our independence requires us to be totally dependent on God, on the one who has made us free. But for our calling to work, for this to work, we have to be totally dependent on the vine and on the vine dresser. Now, the spirit of independence has produced many good things in the world. Again, the United States has been a blessing to the world in the past. Maybe not, I don't know if it is now, but it has been in the past, and those independence spirits in all walks of life have created many good things. But in the end, we all have to depend on someone. In our walk with God and with Christ, this is especially true. So let's be branches on the vine, giving full dependence to Christ the vine and to our Father, the vine dresser.